To start the show today, in 2010, Okemos business owner Dennis Forsberg launched an undisguised effort to start a legal marijuana growing business. He and six others intended to operate within the limits of Michigan's medical marijuana law, even consulting with the Meridian Township Police and officials in Allendale Township. Today, the 59-year-old is a few days away from surrendering to federal authorities in North Carolina and beginning a three-year prison sentence. His son, Lance Forsberg, who talked about his involvement in the plan to current state back in May, is already serving a similar sentence. Late yesterday, I spoke with Dennis Forsberg, who criticized the inconsistency of U.S. drug laws and discussed his unimaginable odyssey from suburban, middle-class business owner to federal prisoner. First, Dennis Forsberg told me he's made it a point to enjoy his last few weeks of freedom.
I've had time with my wife and children. We've been water skiing, pontooning, went to Saugatuck, at Oval Beach, and watching some beautiful sunsets. And you realize how important family is when you know you only got a few days left before you're going to go away. And I've always enjoyed life. Very positive. Every day I just thank God for another day to go to work on a job that I love to do, have a family that I love to be with. Been up north. My father, he just turned 84 this year. Plays golf with him. Watch the sunsets on Burt Lake.
And you surrender when and where?
I surrender in Butner, North Carolina at noon on July 23rd.
That is next Tuesday?
Yes, it is.
What's happening to Forsberg Real Estate while you serve your sentence?
My son, Brent, and it's in good hands. He is just a hard worker, very intelligent, and we're fortunate to have him there taking over the helm while I'm gone.
Quite a few people have read about your original plan, about the six others involved and their roles, about your desire to be above board with everything after the Michigan marijuana law was approved. Briefly tell us about the origins of this plan.
Well, after the law had passed, about a year and a half later, the market has been very poor in the real estate industry. We had some empty buildings. We had an opportunity to lease buildings out. And after several calls of people looking for space for growing medical marijuana, sat down with them, asked them what their business plan was and how they were going about this, to make sure that we were legal per Michigan marijuana laws.
This is for other people or for yourself?
For ourselves, but the people that were going to be leasing my buildings and coming in and growing.
Okay.
I wanted to know what their plan was and how they were going about it. And one gentleman that we worked with, he had legal counsel, and he put together a package, and he was following Michigan medical marijuana laws. We had another gentleman that talked with the state police. He was at his home, and when he talked to state police, they liked the idea of incorporating this into like a industrial facility where three or four caretakers would be under the same roof, and it was safer. It was a safer environment growing it in an industrial space than at your homes.
You became aware of the federal ban on marijuana at what point?
About a month before they came in and they busted us, we had a conference call with our attorneys. The question that came up is that we had heard that there were some busts going on in the area, and that was a concern to us. And so about a month before, we had a conference call with the attorneys that were inspecting the sites and said, yes, you're within Michigan law, just to verify. Here we said that there's busts going on in Michigan and with Michigan medical marijuana growers, and he said, the advice was that you guys are within Michigan law, you're legal. Eric Holder has said that, they're not going to come in and interrupt growers if they're within Michigan law. And then it was a month later that they came in and they had busted. It was about midnight. Two Black Hawk helicopters, National Guard, State Police, and DEA agents were there. And one of the tenants had his legal counsel come down to talk to them and said, my client is within Michigan law, and he's got plants in there that are light sensitive. And they said, well, you don't need to worry about that because we're taking the plants and everything that's there. And they did. And when I went and I talked to local law enforcement and sat down with them and said, you know, what can I do so my buildings, you know, I don't want my buildings forfeited. I'd like to get them leased out. And I did the advice that they'd given us. And I also offered the keys to the police department. You know, the fire department has keys, you know, so they can get into buildings if they're burning. And
okay.
And I had offered my keys, and he said, no. He said, Danny, I can't take your keys, but if there's a problem, I will call you. I will for sure call you, because I said, you can go in any time and inspect the sites. Well, the night that the federal agents came in and had, you know, smashed the doors down, the first thing they did was destroy security cameras. And then they, you know, they just took everything there. They took all the equipment and plants and everything. In the paper the next day, the local police department wasn't even notified that this was going on.
Mm-hmm. What was that next day like, the day after the raid?
We were wondering why. You know, here we had paperwork. You know, our plant counts were under what was allowed, you know, per the caretakers in each of these locations. And it was a year later, Mark, that we were indicted for this. So this was something that, you know, we just thought that they had came in and busted my doors and took all the equipment and plants and didn't hear anything for a year. And then, you know, a year later that, you know, we're going to be indicted. So then we have attorneys, and our attorneys were kind of scratching their heads wondering why are, you know, here they had, were so transparent, you know, went to local law enforcement, you know, the other tenants that were there, they talked to law enforcement also. I had filed a federal tax ID on these because per Michigan law, you're allowed to recoup the, you know, when you're doing your build out and that sort of thing in your building, you're allowed to recoup that. And also a limited liability company for each spot where the build out was being done, because why you do that if anybody's injured, I mean, just like you're, you know, for regular business, if they're injured or whatever, if you have a limited liability company for that location, that's all that they can take from you. So because of that, I think that, you know, gave them evidence to indict us.
Your son Lance told City Pulse that he suspected your operation was being watched by federal authorities. When you first heard that, what did you think?
Well, you would think that they would talk to the local police department. That's why I went and met with them. So if there was a problem with anything, that they just had to call me to get the keys and go in the buildings and take a look. What surprised me is that our local police authorities had no idea that a raid was even happening, and because they weren't notified. Now, I just don't feel that's right. They're the ones that are patrolling the areas and taking care of the areas, and yet they were not notified by the federal agents when they came in and smash the doors down and tear gassed.
Well, that illustrates the disconnect here between the federal approach and the local approach, or the federal approach and the state approach.
Exactly.
Talk about the trial a little bit. What were the key parts of the trial from your perspective? What are you going to remember from that?
Well, when we went in and self-surrendered, when we were indicted and they give you a date to self-surrender, when we had self-surrendered, the judge had said, you are not allowed to use any Michigan law on medical marijuana in this case. This is strictly federal. Now, what I found out is that the federal prosecutor, they have a 95% conviction rate, Mark. 95%. Well, when you can't use any laws that you set up for in your state to, in the first place, for growing medical marijuana within the laws that were voted in this state, I can see why they get a 95% conviction rate. So that is why we did not elect to go to trial, because by going to trial, you do not get, they call it a 501K, which you don't have the mandatory sentence requirements. Whereas if you go to trial and lose, you can't, the judge's hands are tied and can't lessen the sentence.
I need to correct the point in my question here. It did not go to trial. You pleaded guilty.
Yes.
That's right.
And so when I talked to legal counsel on that, there was another case that had just been tried, and it was, I believe, the Duvalls, and it was a father and son, and they had a farm, and they grew medical marijuana on their farm, and I was reading about them on the internet, and a federal agent came and said, yes, you know, everything looks good, you know, keep it closed. And then a couple months later, the same agent, is my understanding, came out and they raided the facilities, and he was so upset he took them to court and he lost, and he's in prison now for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And his son is in prison for 5 years, and he lost his farm that was in the family for 50 years, the land and the barn and the barns and the house and his equipment, and it's really sad. But that is why I wanted to take it to court too, because I just couldn't believe what was going on. But when I found out that the way the laws are written, that and they have a 95% conviction rate, the federal government, that's why I pleaded guilty. And I went from 11 indictments down to 3 indictments.
How would you characterize the way you were treated by the Justice Department, the investigators, the prosecutors?
Well, when my legal counsel brought me in to speak with the federal prosecutor, I just felt like she had her mind made up already. I don't smoke marijuana, but I like the medicinal purposes that it has for gout, for back pain. There's just a lot of good things that it can do to help people. And they labeled me as a drug kingpin, Mark. And it was devastating. I mean, when you get indicted and it says the United States of America, you know, against Dennis Forsberg, it just like tears part of your heart out.
Your son Lance in the City Pulse article also talks about their tone, the tone the agents had when they actually confronted him.
Yes.
And how mocking it was. You wrote to Judge Janet Neff about your role, and you said that you will regret it for the rest of your life. What exactly do you regret?
Knowing what I know now about federal law, I would have never, even though the Michigan voters passed it by, I don't know, 64% or something, I would have never got engaged in it. Because when I went in to get self-surrender and indicting and then talking with the federal prosecutor, and she says, if you have one plant, you're illegal as far as we're concerned. But yet you have Eric Holder, the Attorney General for the United States, and he is quoted as saying, if you're working within Michigan law, we will not raid you. Well, I think they need better communication. There's no consistency in federal law. I had 47 plants, okay? Then there was a total and that the other caretakers, I think a total of 450 plants in 6 locations. And 3 weeks ago, there was a case where an elderly gentleman that had throat cancer had 8,000 plants, and he got off on a few years probation. And I'm going to federal prison for 3 years. I mean, they'd be much better off letting me do community service and work around here with to help. You know, I volunteer and raise money for different charities, and it just seems like it'd be much more productive and better for society rather than locking me from my family 13 hours away. And I would have never got into it knowing what I know now about federal law. But there's another thing, Mark, is that there is nothing on the websites. Okay, you would think that the federal government would put on the websites to like states like Michigan that has passed their laws that if you grow medical marijuana, we will raid, destroy, and put you in jail. In fact, at one of the sentencing of one of the seven, one of the attorneys brought up to the judge that there is a site on how to start your own medical marijuana farm on a federal website. Or why doesn't the state of Michigan that sells licenses to grow medical marijuana to caretakers, why don't they have a website or news media saying, residents, I know that you passed this by, you know, a majority of 60-some percent, but we can't back you or help you if you grow medical marijuana, even though that we have made $10 million in revenue last year with your licenses, we can't do anything to help you. So please don't grow it. I mean, it's unbalanced.
Your wife Joanne has a piece in the New City Pulse that underscores this confusing gap between federal law, the DEA's view, in states like ours, like Michigan. How has this episode impacted her?
Well, it's tore her heart out, too. You know, we have been married for 37 years this year. September is our anniversary. And we have four beautiful children. And, you know, now she has my son Lance is in federal prison. And now I'm going July 23rd, and our families has been just tore apart these last few years. I mean, it took a year before the indictment occurred. And then it was 2 years after that with attorneys and defending yourself. 2 years, Mark. And then, you know, then you find out that you're going to prison. The punishment for the crime just doesn't fit. Everybody that was involved, the seven that were involved in the growing of medical marijuana, had no records. Now we're all felons. Here, you know, they were in insurance and, you know, other businesses. And now because they're felons, when we serve our term in prison, we don't even know if we can get our licenses to, you know, back to do the work that we do.
Your son Lance, who was the plant specialist, the growing specialist in this project, joined us here on Current State in May, just before he began his sentence in West Virginia. Let's listen to Lance sharing his concern for other family members as a result of these convictions.
My father being the patriarch and supporting my mother as she took care of four kids, they're taking away our patriarch and then a son as well. And so it's just very difficult. She's a baby boomer. She's, you know, not in a position to start a new career. And so that's where it really gets shaky as to what's going to happen to them in the next few years.
How much of that concern do you share?
All of it. And I can't do any business in prison. You're not allowed to, you know, do any business. Now, supposedly I can, you know, study and stay up on the field that I'm in, but it's just doesn't seem right. All of these people had jobs and were working. I mean, couldn't we have been tethered, worked our jobs, and maybe reported to a local prison around here, you know, rather than be away from home, not able to work, and especially in an economy right now where there's not a whole lot of jobs out there. I mean, it's just, but I know this, that your question earlier is I've enjoyed every second, you know, even more, every minute, every second with my family, knowing that I'm going away, you know, to show them, you know, how much I love them and I'm going to miss them. And you know, we've had some good quality time together. So it's pulled us even closer together as a family. I will say that, Mark, but, you know.
How is your son doing in West Virginia?
He is doing well. He's able to, he's got a three-year-old daughter that he just adores her, and it just tore his heart out to be away from her. But he gets to call and talk to her, and that helps. And, you know, Daddy's working out of town, but when he, you know, he'll be back and see you soon, is how we're addressing it. So, you know, he's adapting, I guess, as well as you could for the situation.
Have you anticipated the day you're incarcerated?
Yeah, but I've already, you know, did my crying about it to myself, and now I've got to, you know, serve my sentence. I broke the law, and you know, I'm going to jail for it per federal law. But again, the penalty for what was done. Now, in this crime, there was no violence, no guns, no victim, no one was hurt, and we were within Michigan law, and per federal law, were, you know, guilty. You know, it was like no mercy.
What security level prison is this? Is it medium, low, high, what?
It's a low. Because again, there was no violence, no guns, no one hurt. I'm reading on my rules and regulations on what is allowed. You know, you got to go in there and you got to buy your clothes and you know, it's just a new way of life that you got to get. So I'm trying to read up and learn about it. You know, I mean, but other than that, I'll be able to tell you more, Mark. You know, when I get done, I'll be glad to have an interview with you and give you the full scoop on that.
Do you visualize life after prison?
Oh, yeah. Oh, life is good.
What do you visualize after you get out?
I visualize being back with my family, being back with my bride of 37 years, as I mentioned this year. I still consider her as my bride. And getting back to a job that I love to do, and maybe take more vacations. You know, I've taken more vacation in this last couple months, knowing, you know, I'm not going to be around. And so that was a wake-up call that take more time with your family and enjoy them while you're here. That's what I'm going to do.
Dennis Forsberg, thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you, Mark.